Imagine paying like $100 for a VIP ticket to this sprawling theme park.
Right.
But then you realize the ticket doesn't physically exist. You don't actually own anything. And the park owners can just lock you out of the gates at any time.
Which is terrifying, honestly.
Yeah. Today is Thursday, June 25, 2026. And the concept of truly owning something in the digital world is, oh, it's officially on life support.
It really is. And we're seeing the consequences of that shift everywhere. I mean, we are witnessing a historic, almost aggressive consolidation of power among platform owners right now.
Yeah.
The old model where you bought a product and the transaction was over, that's been entirely replaced by this new model of like permanent surveillance and permanent rent.
Which is exactly our mission for this deep dive.
Mm.
We're taking a massive stack of tech, gaming, and finance news from Tech and Morning. And we're looking at the raw power shifts happening today.
Across everything, really. Entertainment, AI, finance.
Even low Earth orbit. And more importantly, we want to figure out what these shifts are actually costing you, the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's unpack this by starting with the biggest entertainment story on the planet right now, because it is the perfect case study.
Oh, absolutely.
Rockstar Games finally dropped the official pricing for Grand Theft Auto 6. The standard edition is $80.
Wow.
And the ultimate edition will set you back $100.
Which officially sets a new, unignorable high watermark for the ninth console generation. We've seen $80 games tested in the market before, sure, but GTA 6 has the kind of gravitational pull that turns an experiment into an industry-wide mandate.
Exactly.
With a production budget estimated at over $1 billion, and considering the rampant inflation we've seen over the last few years, the publisher actually has a pretty solid economic defense for that price tag.
Right, but the perks for that extra $20 are so highly specific, it feels like psychological warfare. For $100, you get the Ultimate Edition, which includes like the Hawk and Little Morgan revolvers, and they're engraved with the names of the protagonists, Jason and Lucia.
Nice touch.
Yeah, and you get early access to a 67 Vapid Dominator buggy, plus access to a completely new location called the Paradise Garage, strictly for fencing stolen goods.
So it's basically the theme park admission model.
Yes. Is this the theme park admission model of gaming? You pay an $80 entry fee just to get through the gates, but if you want the fast pass or access to the VIP lounge like that Paradise Garage, you have to drop $100. And the craziest part, you don't even own a physical ticket.
What's fascinating here is understanding the why behind that. The standard physical release isn't really a physical release at all.
Right. It's the classic code-in-a-box controversy. Nintendo Life actually reported that some retailers are flat-out refusing to stock the game until Rockstar prints a proper disc. I mean, how do you justify handing someone an empty plastic box for $80?
Well, you justify it by understanding that Rockstar isn't just charging you $80 for a game. They're charging you $80 to decommission the physical media market entirely.
Wow.
A digital download code in a physical box is a Trojan horse. It completely kills the secondhand market. You can't lend this game to a friend. You can't trade back into a store for credit.
That's true.
It also eliminates early physical leaks from warehouses, which have, you know, plagued the industry for decades. By forcing every single player into a purely digital ecosystem, the publisher maintains absolute, undeniable control over distribution and pricing forever.
Which makes Sony's involvement even more intense. They are leaning so hard into this partnership ahead of the November 19, 2026 launch.
Oh yeah, they are everywhere with it.
They added a custom GTA 6 startup screen to the PS5 Welcome Hub widget. They even claimed in their marketing that it plays best on PS5 due to the custom SSD and DualSense haptics.
But they had to take that down, right?
Yeah. Polygon reported they had to quietly scrub those posts because of an alleged legal battle with Microsoft over marketing parody.
The platform war is vicious because the technical stakes are just so high. GameSpot analyzed the 63 newly released screenshots, and the density of NPCs and vehicles is staggering.
It looks incredible.
Digital Foundry suspects it's running on an advanced Rage 9 or 10 engine with heavy ray tracing, so they have to maximize the perception of hardware superiority.
We even saw a Shih Tzu Squalo watercraft with both Jason and Lucia operating it, which heavily hints at dynamic real-time character switching. But notably missing from all this hype is multiplayer.
Yeah, that was a huge surprise.
Kotaku reports GTA Online 2 is launching entirely separately, maybe 6 to 12 months down the line. And PC players are looking at a 12 to 18 month delay. So you have to ask yourself, where is your threshold?
Right.
When you're paying $80 for a code in an empty box for a game missing its multiplayer mode, who really holds the power?
The publisher holds it. Rockstar has engineered an ecosystem where you have absolutely no choice but to opt in on their terms.
But that danger of ecosystem lock-in isn't just about video games. Rockstar can charge $80 because they've trapped consumers in an entertainment ecosystem. But if you're a major European bank, getting locked into an American artificial intelligence ecosystem isn't an $80 problem. It is a multi-billion dollar national security threat.
Exactly.
Which brings us to a massive shift happening in Europe right now.
We are seeing a fierce pivot toward digital autonomy, driven largely by Mistral AI, the French company that just released OCR4.
And to be clear, this isn't the basic text scanning you use on your phone. Mistral's OCR4 supports 170 languages. It reads complex PDFs, Word docs, PowerPoint presentations, and actually understands the structural architecture of the document.
Yeah, the spatial awareness is wild.
It draws bounding boxes around titles. It understands where tables begin and end. It spots signatures, and it provides word-by-word confidence scores.
But the underlying technology isn't even the most vital part of the story. The key differentiator is deployment. OCR4 can be run entirely on a company's own internal servers.
Here's where it gets really interesting. This feels like a digital declaration of independence for Europe. Think about it. You wouldn't store your company's most sensitive legal and financial documents in your rival's filing cabinet.
No, of course not.
So why on earth would European companies hand over the keys to their AI to American clouds?
They shouldn't. And they recently learned a very painful lesson about why they can't. The catalyst for this push for sovereignty happened back on June 12th.
Right.
The United States government, citing export control laws, abruptly cut off all non-U.S. access to Anthropic's new Fable 5 and Mythos 5 models. There was no transition period.
Just a total blackout.
European companies whose entire customer service or data analysis pipelines relied on those APIs were left totally in the dark overnight.
That is terrifying. If your software stops working because a foreign government flicked a switch, you don't actually have a business.
Exactly. Relying on U.S.-based AI providers means your corporate data is subject to U.S. jurisdiction, which includes the risk of surveillance by FISA courts. With the European AI Act taking full effect on August 2, 2026, European companies are desperate for localized compliant solutions. Mistral CEO Arthur Mensch has been warning about this geopolitical risk for a year.
Now, Mistral is charging $4 per 1,000 pages for OCR4, which drops to $2 for the batch API. But I have to push back a little here.
Okay.
Because Chinese tech giant Baidu dropped a completely free open source model called Unlimited OCR just a day earlier, and it got massive traction on GitHub. If you're a company trying to cut costs, why not just use the free Chinese model?
Because an enterprise needs accountability. A massive bank scanning millions of contracts needs service-level agreements and dedicated support. More importantly, they need the deep intelligence OCR4 provides for ARIG systems.
Okay, let's break that down, because ARIG gets thrown around a lot. Retrieval augmented generation.
Mm.
What is the actual mechanism there?
Think of a standard AI chatbot as having read a library of books, but it can't remember exactly which book a fact came from.
So it just makes something up.
Right. Sometimes it hallucinates an answer. ARIG changes that. With the ARIG system, when you ask the AI a question, it first retrieves the exact specific document from your company's private database, reads it, and then generates an answer based strictly on that document.
Okay, I see.
For that to work, the AI needs to know that a specific financial figure came from page 12, paragraph 3, table 2. Mistral's OCR4 provides that exact spatial mapping. It's the foundation for Europe to build its own secure, sovereign AI infrastructure.
So we're talking about building sovereign systems to escape traditional national control. But speaking of escaping traditional systems, let's pivot to cryptocurrency.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Bitcoin was designed specifically as the ultimate sovereign asset, right? A decentralized hedge against the traditional financial system. But last night, it crashed below $60,000. Hitting $59,000 and triggering over $1 billion in liquidations.
Yeah, a brutal night for crypto.
And ironically, it's crashing because it's become utterly tethered to the very institutions it was supposed to bypass.
It is the ultimate paradox of institutional adoption. When Bitcoin hit $59,000, we saw massive forced selling. A liquidation event happens when traders borrow money to bet the price will go up those leveraged long positions.
Right.
When the price drops below a certain threshold, the exchanges automatically sell off those assets to cover the debt. It's a cascading effect that dragged Ethereum down to $1,665 alongside it.
But look at the three primary causes driving this drop. We're seeing sustained outflows from spot Bitcoin ETFs. We're seeing a strengthening U.S. dollar because of hawkish Federal Reserve interest rate expectations.
Yep.
And Strategy, the company formerly known as MicroStrategy, is pulling back on its buying.
Wait, wasn't Bitcoin supposed to be immune to this? It was designed to be a hedge against the traditional economy. Now it's crashing because of the strong U.S. dollar and Fed rates. It sounds like it just became another traditional tech stock.
I would argue it absolutely has become one. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the approval of those Wall Street ETFs fundamentally altered Bitcoin's DNA.
Awesome. You cannot inject billions of dollars of traditional institutional capital into an ecosystem and expect it to remain a rebellious outsider. It is now heavily correlated with traditional risk assets. Institutions trade it just like they trade Apple or Tesla.
Which has to be terrifying for the crypto purists.
What about the famous four-year halving cycle? The April 2026 halving was treated like a religious event that was supposed to trigger a massive bull run, you know, based on the patterns we saw in 2013 and 2017.
That debate is tearing the community apart right now. The halving reduced the supply of new coins, yes, but the market structure is entirely different today.
Right.
In 2017, it was retail investors driving the price. Today, you have massive pension funds and algorithmic trading desks in charge. The famous rainbow chart that analysts use to predict prices is currently flashing the BTC is dead zone. But the reality is that those historical data models might simply be obsolete. And the collateral damage is very real. Look at Michael Saylor's company, Strategy. Their entire corporate identity is a debt-fueled Bitcoin buying machine. Their stock just plummeted below $100 for the first time since March 2024.
It's bad.
They are actively diluting their own shares, literally issuing more stock and turning their shareholders into a cash backstop just to keep buying Bitcoin. With an average purchase price around $42,000, dropping below $60,000 starts making traditional investors sweat about a massive liquidity crisis.
The sentiment has fundamentally shifted. For the first time in months, U.S. investors have turned into net sellers. We're seeing long-term holders finally moving their coins out of cold storage and onto exchanges, preparing to sell.
And the regulatory walls are closing in simultaneously. Binance just withdrew its application for MiCA compliance in Greece, just days ahead of the firm's July 1st European Union deadline.
That's a huge deal.
MiCA requires incredibly strict know-your-customer rules and massive capital reserves. If Binance doesn't secure authorization somewhere else in the EU immediately, they could be forced to shut down their European operations completely.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin is struggling to maintain its decentralized promise down here on Earth. But meanwhile, a single company is rapidly centralizing and monopolizing the actual physical space directly above us.
We are truly entering an era of privatized low Earth orbit.
SpaceX just launched another Falcon 9 rocket from Vandenberg Space Force Base, delivering 24 more Starlink satellites. The booster landed perfectly on the drone ship, Of Course I Still Love You. They now have over 6,000 active satellites in orbit, and Elon Musk's stated goal is 42,000.
The operational cadence is what truly demands attention. That launch was their 85th successful mission in 2026 alone.
That is one launch every 2.5 days. Launching a rocket every 2.5 days is basically treating space travel like a cross-country bus schedule.
It really is.
But with 42,000 satellites planned, who is actually acting as air traffic control up there?
Right now, almost nobody. That is the critical vulnerability. SpaceX operates as an unchecked monopoly in the satellite launch industry.
Right.
By perfecting reusable rockets, flying the same boosters up to 20 times, they've crushed the economics of spaceflight. They dropped the cost of putting a kilogram into orbit from around $10,000 to under $1,500. Competitors like Blue Origin and even the National Chinese Space Program simply cannot match that efficiency.
And we can't deny the utility. Starlink is delivering 50 to 200 megabits per second speeds globally. It is life-changing for remote areas.
It is, but it's a dual-edged sword. The lack of international treaties limiting deployment is creating profound systemic risks. Astronomers are furious because satellite light trails are now ruining 20% of all twilight observations.
Wow.
But the true existential threat is Kessler syndrome.
Break down Kessler syndrome for us. What is the actual mechanism of failure there?
Kessler syndrome is a theoretical scenario of a runaway debris cascade. If you pack tens of thousands of satellites into low Earth orbit, eventually two of them will collide. That collision shatters them into thousands of pieces of shrapnel flying at 17,000 miles per hour. That shrapnel then hits other satellites, creating more shrapnel, triggering an unstoppable chain reaction.
That sounds like a nightmare.
If that happens, it could wrap the Earth in a cloud of high-speed debris, rendering certain orbital altitudes completely unusable for human spaceflight or new satellites for decades.
So we have a single private company holding the keys to our orbital infrastructure, creating a massive single point of failure in space. But honestly, we don't even need to look to space to see the dangers of vulnerable centralized infrastructure. We are seeing very real, invisible breaches happening right now in our earthly corporate networks.
The Cisco zero-day vulnerability we saw this morning is a chilling example of how fragile our enterprise foundations truly are.
Yeah, Mandiant just released a report revealing a critical zero-day vulnerability designated CVE-2026-2020-45 in Cisco Catalyst SD-WAN systems.
A huge deal.
The terrifying part isn't just the bug itself. It's that state-sponsored hackers were actively exploiting it for 2 full months before anyone even knew it existed. It carries a severity score of 7.8 out of 10, and CISA ordered all government organizations to patch it immediately by June 26th.
To understand why this is so critical, you have to understand what SD-WAN actually is. A software-defined wide area network is essentially the central post office for a massive corporation.
Right.
It securely routes all the internal traffic between branch offices, data centers, and the cloud. If an attacker compromises the SD-WAN, they hold the master key. They can silently intercept traffic, steal proprietary data, or prepare to deploy ransomware across the entire internal infrastructure.
The report said the attackers used rogue peering. What does that actually mean?
Keeping with the post office analogy, rogue peering means the attackers didn't just break in through the front door and smash the place up. Instead, they quietly built their own secret, unauthorized sorting desk in the back room. They configured the network routers to treat their malicious servers as trusted peers, allowing them to quietly copy and reroute incredibly sensitive data completely undetected for months.
But then, on the flip side of the cybersecurity coin, we have Europol's Operation Endgame. Law enforcement agencies across 15 different countries collaborated to dismantle the infrastructure for the Amity and SteelSea malware networks.
That was a massive operation.
They seized physical servers, froze bank accounts, and recovered 27 million stolen credentials.
So what does this all mean? We just talked about Europol taking down a massive ransomware assembly line across 15 countries, but then we hear that nation-state hackers have been sitting inside CISO corporate gateways for months undetected. Are we actually winning the cybersecurity war, or just playing a very expensive game of whack-a-mole?
We are fighting two entirely different wars. It's the difference between fighting street crime and fighting deep cover espionage. Operation Endgame was a massive victory against the cybercriminal ecosystem.
Right. Those groups use malware like Amity to infiltrate a system, SteelSea to scrape passwords, and then they deploy ransomware to lock the system down for a quick financial payout. It's economically motivated, loud, and highly resilient.
But the Cisco attack?
The Cisco attack is the definition of an advanced persistent threat, or APT. These are state-sponsored actors. They don't want a quick crypto ransom. They want long-term intelligence gathering. They demonstrated immense patience and a deep architectural understanding of Cisco's proprietary systems. They wanted to remain invisible.
Which means for you listening right now, whether you are managing an enterprise IT department or just trying to keep your home network safe, you have to understand that cybersecurity is a continuous process, not a one-time fix. You have to prioritize hardware firmware updates, enforce two-factor authentication, and basically assume that your perimeter is already breached.
The perimeter is a myth. You have to monitor what happens inside the network because that's where the patient threats live.
Which actually brings this entire conversation full circle back to gaming. We're seeing these exact same themes of security, consolidation, and quality control playing out rapidly in our morning briefs.
The platform owners are aggressively cleaning house to protect their ecosystems.
Look at Sony. Over the last 24 hours, they initiated a massive purge on the PlayStation Store, aggressively removing over 1,000 low-quality shovelware titles. They completely banned a studio called Avifil Games from publishing.
It's a heavy-handed response to the storefront becoming bloated with cheap asset flips designed solely to let players buy easy platinum trophies. It improves quality control, absolutely, but it also reminds everyone who actually holds the keys to the walled garden.
Sony purging 1,000 games is like finally cleaning out a digital garage after a decade of hoarding junk. But on the flip side, you have indie developer Toby Fox. He just released Deltarune Chapter 5. And it immediately set concurrent player records on Steam, despite having bugs that were literally crashing consoles at launch.
Yeah, that was crazy.
It proves that despite $1 billion GTA 6 budgets, you don't need a massive corporate machine to capture the culture.
This raises an important question about where the soul of the entertainment industry actually resides. you have this immense grassroots organic passion surrounding an indie game like Deltarune. But then you look at the esports scene, where Saudi Arabia just executed a full financial takeover of EVO, the biggest fighting game tournament in the world.
And the fighting game community is incredibly tense about it. They desperately need the operational funding to grow the tournament, but they are terrified of sports washing and losing the inclusive arcade culture origins that made EVO special in the first place.
It's the ultimate friction point between grassroots passion and massive corporate or state plays.
We're seeing those corporate chess moves everywhere as companies brace for the next generation of hardware. Nintendo is quietly lining up the Switch 2 software slate. Demon Slayer 2 is launching October 29, 2026. They've got a new Star Fox featuring voice actor Hunter McCoy. And they are already heavily discounting physical copies of Metroid Prime 4 down to $44.99 on Amazon.
The discounting mechanism there is purely strategic. They are willing to take a loss on software margins right now just to ensure early hardware adopters buy into the Switch 2 ecosystem immediately. Once you buy the console, you're locked in.
And Sony is already countering those moves. Bloomberg's Jason Schreier reports that the next God of War game, subtitled Laufey, which focuses on Kratos' mother, is being pushed to February or March of 2027.
They're strategically repositioning to avoid getting completely crushed by Rockstar's gravity in November 2026. By moving God of War to early 2027, Sony ensures they dominate the post-GTA narrative void.
It's incredible how deeply interconnected all of these isolated stories truly are. Whether we are talking about Rockstar dictating an $80 standard and quietly killing the physical media market, Mistral fighting to give Europe sovereignty over its corporate data, SpaceX single-handedly cornering the physical market of low Earth orbit, or Bitcoin struggling against the gravity of Wall Street. It all comes down to a single undeniable truth. It is all about who controls the infrastructure and what they charge you to access it.
If we extrapolate that outward, the implications are staggering. Think about it. If SpaceX ultimately controls the physical internet infrastructure from space, and Europe is using AI tools like Mistral to build a digital sovereign border on the ground, what happens when geopolitical tensions reach a boiling point? Could we see a future where nations physically block satellite signals to protect their AI data sovereignty, permanently fracturing the global internet into isolated regional sky networks?
Wow, that is a brilliant, heavy thought to leave off on, and exactly why we dig into these sources. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. Keep questioning the digital walls being built around you. And remember, just because you paid the price of admission doesn't mean you actually own the theme park. We'll catch you next time.